Welcome to the Music Career Show, telling you the stories of the world's best professional musicians.
Hello there and welcome to the Music Career Show. My name is Barry and every week I'll be speaking with incredible musicians from all over the world about how they've honed their craft and made a career out of doing what they love the most. If you're a new listener, then while you still have your device in your hand, please take a second to subscribe and tell your friends all about the Music Career Show. Hello there and welcome back to the Music Career Show. So my guest today is a tin whistle, an Irish flute player based in Nashville, which is in Tennessee, lads. And in his own words, he teaches people through his social media channels by making overly produced videos, and he has fun while doing it. And this is Sean Cunningham. Good morning, Hello, Sean. Hello. I believe it's Sunday morning for you there, is it?
It is, yeah. It's, what are we, about 9 o'clock in the morning here, yeah.
Fair play to you for getting up so early on a Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah,
you normally wouldn't have me up as early on a Sunday, but hey-ho, hey-ho. Listen, Sean, I know all about you. For the people that are listening that maybe don't know you just yet, why don't you introduce yourself, tell them who you are, what you do, what the crack is.
Sure, absolutely. Again, my name's Sean. I've been playing tin whistle since 1996, I think, something like that. Flute since about 97. Played bagpipes, Highland bagpipes, in a pipe band here for a while. But mostly I'm an IT guy by trade. I do web development, I do computer management, I do videography. But my not so side hustle is playing Irish music. So
love it.
Been at it for 20 some odd years, 25 years, something like that now.
Yeah, fair play. I was going to say you should start a TikTok on your side hustle, but I was like, that's a little bit kind of. It just seems to be the thing nowadays, TikTok side hustles.
Sadly, I do have one of those, yeah, for better or worse.
Definitely for better, better. I followed your whole Irish trip on TikTok. I followed the whole lot. Yeah. So I loved it. Sorry, I completely interrupted you.
No, I'm concerned I might be a little too old for TikTok, but we'll see how it goes anyway.
People said that about Instagram when Instagram came out. Oh, I'm too old for Instagram. True. And then people said that about Facebook, and then all of a sudden everyone's granny was on Facebook, and sure, look it.
Yeah.
So, great stuff. I didn't know you played bagpipes. That's a really interesting one.
I did. I try not to anymore. Not when I can help it. But it's not. Yeah, I played Illan pipes for a while, and eventually, I'm sure my teeth will fall out, and I'll have to get in. I'll have to relearn how to do that when I can't play the flute anymore. But yeah, the Highland pipes were fun for a while. Got me a good background, I suppose, in a lot of the stuff. But
yeah,
they're just loud.
They're very loud. I live in Scotland, and I've got some guitar students that they play bagpipes and they play chanter and stuff like that, and you can hear them from a mile away. And horrible until you get it right. Absolutely horrible until you get it right. Like,
yes. Devastating.
But yeah. hey ho, tin whistle can be exactly the same. When I play tin whistle, it's dire altogether. But hey ho. Let's reverse back then a little bit, Sean. Where did music start for you?
Well, Irish music started. My dad had a pub in New York, so I kind of got into it there. But when I was young, I learned piano. I was terrible at it, never practiced. My folks made me do it, and as much as I kicked and screamed to do it, it did give me a decent musical background, like learning to read sheet music and such. Not that I'm particularly great at that, but
yeah,
it was certainly a good start. But then I found the whistle when I was about 15, 16, a friend of mine turned me onto the Pogues, and I got listened to Spider Stacy playing the whistle, and I thought, oh, that sounds like fun. And
class.
So then my dad opened up a pub in New York, and I sat in the basement of his bar banging out Pogues tunes by ear as best I could until an all-Ireland button accordion player happened to be in there and got chatting and took me out to a session and sort of opened my eyes, and my whole world changed really at that point.
Oh,
so I'm learning the wrong music. I want to learn this stuff. So
yeah,
I did after that and kind of dove in.
Ah, class. That's the best start to a story ever. My dad had a pub in New York. What was the name of the pub?
It's called Liquid Assets. It was a couple blocks below Wall Street. So it was a Wall Street vibe, but an Irish bar and it was all Irish staff. So I just kind of was surrounded by it. And my dad's from Sligo. So I kind of grew up listening to some of the music, Clancy Brothers and the Dubliners and some of the ballad ear guys, but not really a whole lot of trad stuff, jigs and reels stuff, the occasional Planxty here and there, but really I didn't get into that until I got to New York and got taken out to the sessions at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I've been at many. There's a lot to be said for him. There's a lot to be said. So you were saying about you got piano lessons and stuff like that, and it was really a good foundation. Were you just one of those kids that just wasn't teachable, or it just wasn't suitable to you?
it just didn't grab my interest. I'm one of those kids who's pretty good at learning stuff that they're interested in and pretty bad at learning stuff that they have to learn because school tells them to do it. You know, if I find a class, if it was a history class that I was really into, boy, I'd get great, I'd get all A's. If it was a calculus class that I was not interested in and terrible at,
yeah,
you know, did not do well. So same kind of thing with music. I didn't practice. I was lazy. You know, I just wasn't interested.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I found, you know, something that I actually enjoyed playing.
Yeah.
I decided I'm going to commit all of my hours to this. And that's kind of what I did.
I love it. And that came around at age 15, was it?
More 16, 17. I was definitely late by most standards. I was late to the music, most folks. Yeah. Certainly on the whistle and stuff, or at least in America, the recorder, you know, people are starting on that at age 6, 7, 8, something like that. You know, people get started real young, and I never did. So I was definitely behind for a long time, but I hopefully made up for it by investing a ton of time in it. And because I just really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, I think you have. Yeah. So you're practicing away then in the basement of Liquid Acids down there on Wall Street with Leo and all the boys. And then you said that you got taken out to a session. Now, yeah. I know in America, I once saw a 50 or 60 year old person get ID'd in America for in a pub. So my impression of it is that it's very, very strict in terms of like underagers being in pubs and stuff. Was that an issue for you, or did you just sort of snake in with your tin whistle case?
No, yes and no. New York was a bit of an odd scene. I don't know if I just looked older in New York than I did in Nashville when I was up there, because I hardly ever got carded there when I was younger. Plus, it was a bit different in the 90s than it is now, I'm sure. But that first session I walked in, it was a place called Mona's. And there's a classic recording called Live at Mona's, a wonderful session recording, which came out years after that. But Mona's was sort of a hub of the scene at the time. And it was a hole in the wall. It was nothing but a Bud Light sign on the door. And, you know, there was nothing. You had no idea knowing what it was till you walked in. And then as soon as I walk in, they spotted me. They said, oh, he's too young. He can't be in here. And they go, oh, no, he's with us. And so, oh, no problem. She pulled me a pint. And so I just sat down and listened. Okay, I kind of like this. That was my first experience. And I definitely wasn't up to playing level. I was definitely there just to listen. And but I kind of felt like I was in the club.
I love it.
Based on that experience alone. And then my mind was blown by people who turned out to be absolute legends. And people who were on that Live at Mona's recording a few years later. That also kind of changed the direction of my life.
Right. Who were they? Go on, name drop. Can you name drop?
Honestly, the first fellow was a guitar player by the name of John Doyle, who is now famous with the band Solus and a bunch of other stuff. And that was very early in the Solus days.
Yeah.
Philippe Varley was on fiddle. Not Philippe Varley, he's the one up in D.C. What's his face on fiddle? Now I can see his face. I can't think of his name. Oh, God, it's been too long. God, I'd have to get out the record and see who all was on it. There's a bunch of those guys were there. We had John Doyle and John Redmond was the box player who kind of got me into it, and they were buds. So they took me out, and we went to one session. There was nobody there, nothing happening. Then we went over to Mona's, and that's where it was. So
that's where the crack was.
It was great. Yeah, it was wonderful.
That's absolutely class. That's brilliant. So fast forward then a little bit. So as you said, you were a smidge late to the game, and then you sort of got thrown straight into the deep end. Huh. How did you then translate from like going and getting served your first pint kind of on the sly to then going and gigging in pubs in New York and cutting your teeth, that sort of thing?
Well, the bagpipes kind of got me my first real gigs.
All right.
Yeah, I was playing in a pipe band. And my first ever actual paid gig was at what we now call the Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville in front of 20,000 people. It was the grand opening of that building.
That's handy.
Yeah, it was something. It was Vince Gill and Amy Grant and all these big-time country people, and they just happened to be big fans of bagpipes, so they had us come out there, and we did a thing with the Nashville Symphony Orchestra, and so my first gig was in front of 20,000, so after that, it was no more stage fright, I guess. Never really had to worry about it after that.
Jesus,
yeah. But it was I was eagerly interested in joining bands. I joined the pipe band. I joined a band when I went off to college for a brief period of time. Whether they were good or not is probably up for debate, but I was just any excuse to play. Whether it was sitting around by myself or finding other folks, that was always my first venture whenever I got to a new town.
Yeah.
What's the scene like? Where's, you know, who's the players here? Whether there's two of them or whether there's 100 of them, I want to find out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, first gig was 20 in front of 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Two nights. Yeah. 40,000 in total.
That's a first. I've never heard that before.
It was the first time I ever got paid for a gig. I'd done a parade or two and such that we didn't get paid for, but that was my first ever paid gig. I think I made like 10 bucks because we split it amongst the band.
Oh, well, a pipe band, like it's not, yeah. Like you're getting 300 quid for the pipe band or 30 or 40. It doesn't leave an awful lot, but that's class, like. So you got into, so how did that come about then? So you started off on whistle. How did you get into bagpipes then? What was the segue?
Well, I kind of did both about the same time. My dad was a big fan of bagpipes. He loved the Scottish Fiddle Orchestra and all that kind of stuff, the kind of the classical old school kind of stuff. And he got me a practice shanner for bagpipes. And so I sat around banging away on that. That I did take a couple of lessons in because we did, fortunately, had the pipe band here in Nashville. So I was able to meet up with some of those folks.
Yeah.
And really just diving in with that the same as I did with the whistle. I would typically do 4 days of bagpipe practice and 1 day of whistle practice when I was in school.
All right.
Fridays were my Irish trad days, and the other days were the bagpipe days because I was competing and, you know, we were traveling and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
A bit more like work, which is one of the reasons why I don't really do it anymore.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
A bit like work.
A little bit like work,
Yeah. Very good. Just being in those worlds, and there was a fair bit of crossover, too. Some of those, the bagpipers were also interested in Irish stuff and flute and whistle and Illan pipes, and so it kind of got me more connected to that. But really, it was the New York scene. I'd go up to New York every chance I got to hang out at my dad's pub and go out to the sessions, and every time I could, I'd get up there and play.
Amazing. And then so then after your first paying gig, when did you start like sort of gigging, not full time, but when did you kind of, how long did it take you to become like established as a musician?
Well, I don't know about so much in New York, but I definitely not nearly as long as it should have to go out traveling, because I was in college for a year, dropped out to join an Irish rock band, and went on the road for about 3 years after that, which may or may not have been the best idea, but it was a hell of a lot of fun and some good experience.
I'd say so.
It was worth it for that, and I was studying stuff that I had no business studying as well, and that I wasn't going to do anyway. So, at least I got to study a bit of real world experience out on the road.
Exactly. What age were you when you did that?
19.
19. Class. Yeah. Class.
Yep. My folks weren't thrilled. They weren't thrilled, but knew that my mind wasn't going to be changed at that point.
Did it do you any harm?
I don't think so.
Not in the long run, anyway.
You're still here. It all worked itself out, yeah.
I did exactly the same. I 2 years in college, and that was all my course was sound engineering, and then I went and moved to Spain and played in Irish pubs there, and then I went and toured America and stuff like that, and I was, like, when I was 19 when I went to Spain first, so yeah. You have to do it at that stage, because you're not able for it.
I wasn't ready for college at the time.
What were you studying in college?
Genetic engineering.
Like Jurassic Park sort of job?
Exactly like Jurassic Park. In fact, that's what, when I was 12 or 13, whenever that movie came out, that was another one of those life-changing directional movements that I decided I was going to be a geneticist, yeah.
Wow. Okay, fair enough.
Turns out there's a lot of math in that.
No good. If you need to count past four, it's not worth it.
Not nearly as much math in the Irish rock band circuit.
No, definitely not. So what was the name of the Irish rock band then?
The group was called 6 Mile Bridge, named after the town in Clare.
I recognized that when you said it.
Yep.
6 Mile Bridge in Clare. Yeah, very, very good. Yep. And you were 19. You dropped out of college. You weren't going to be, I don't know what even you'd call it, a Jurassic Parker.
Sure.
You went on tour with an Irish rock band. Fantastic. With 6 Mile Bridge. Yep. What was the first tour experience like?
Well, it was mostly, it was the East Coast, I remember, and it was a lot of familiarity. So we hit New York and Boston and DC and that whole area. It was mostly the change of being jammed into a 15 passenger van with five other people and the back two seats pulled out because we had all the gear in it. So you spent a lot of time sleeping, squished up. There was a lot of that. That was a little different. And a lot of time invested before and after the gigs, which I wasn't aware of, between the chatting with the club owners and chatting with the people that were, you know, VIP people staying with afterwards and all this. There's a lot involved and beyond just playing the gig.
Setting up and tearing down and all that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of that.
I had a mate of mine that once said, whoever invents an inflatable PA system will be the richest man in the world. Yeah,
that'd be nice. Some of them have gotten pretty small, not small enough to be able to fill a big room with a big band. But for some of the acoustic stuff that we do these days, boy, some of those small PAs are great for that.
Yamaha Stage Pass. I had one. I used one yesterday at my gig yesterday, and it fits all into a suitcase. Phenomenal. Yeah, yeah. Phenomenal.
Always makes a pretty cool compact one, too.
Always does a great one as well. Yeah.
Yeah, not bad.
We're getting there. We're getting there. Maybe some of your genetic engineer friends could Jurassic Park an inflatable PA system.
Surely that's exactly how it works. Yeah,
that's exactly it. That's exactly how it works. Surely.
Absolutely.
And some of those, like on those, because I've toured up and down the East Coast as well, and it's phenomenal. DC, I spent loads of time in DC. DC is a great place. Yeah. Like, what were some of your favorite places?
The festivals, for sure. We used to play. Well, we played the Milwaukee Irish Festival, which is going on right now. Actually,
yeah.
I wish I could have gotten up there to hang out with some of those guys. But Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, there's a festival called the Celtic Classic out there, which we just always had a blast at. It's been 15 years probably since I've been there, so hopefully it's still going strong.
Yeah,
but just good people. They always take care of you, and they're filled with folks who are there to hear the music. You know, that's the best part about it. You're not just playing to a pub where you're sort of interrupting somebody's dinner. You're playing to folks who are there to hear you, which is, you know, I get the whole point, really. And that's nothing better than 10,000 people who are there to listen to Irish music.
Yeah,
that's pretty great. Yeah, pretty cool.
I've only ever had that like maybe once or twice in my life. And in fact, one of them was last weekend. There was a fringe festival here in Aberdeen. And I was playing at it in the Irish pub that I play at every fucking week was where it was anyway. And sure, I went and played not all the usual Irish songs, but all the songs that I either aren't allowed to play or I just don't. And it was so weird to have a clap after every single one, and then people be totally silent during the songs, and people actually listen to me. I was like, I don't know if I like it or not, but it's so weird. Like, it's so weird. But I've always wanted.
It's a strange vibe. Yeah,
it's a very strange vibe because you're used to like playing all the like kind of get up and go stuff, and people are like kind of having the crack, and or as you say, you're interrupting them and kind of. But some of those pubs that I played in up and down the East Coast, there was one in particular. I wonder if you ever played at it. Four Green Fields down in Tampa Bay.
Tampa. I know some of the folks in Orlando. I don't think I know any places in Tampa. My company has offices down there, so I'm actually in Tampa and St. Pete a fair bit. I don't think I've run across that one.
Well, Four Green Fields. Do. It's the second best pint of Guinness I've ever had in my life. Second only to O'Connell's on Air Square in Galway.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was unbelievable. We walked into the place and it's like, it's got a thatched roof. It's one of only the owner who is a descendant. He's like a niece or a great nephew of Dan Breen, an Irish historical figure. Anyway, he was telling me it's one of only maybe four or five buildings in the whole of the United States that has a thatched roof, or businesses maybe that has a thatched roof.
I mean, I can't believe that works in Florida with all the hurricanes and such that come through there.
I know. I thought that myself. Because we used to, when I was growing up, we used to be in Florida a lot on holiday. Very, very fortunate. And we were there for a hurricane one time and the whole place shut. Just batting down the hatches, sandbags outside the shopping centers. And it just flooded instantly. I once saw a fish swimming down the road. And I thought, well, me as a child thinking that was absolutely fucking hilarious, not really getting the gravity of the whole situation, but still, you know yourself. Attached roof, second best pint of Guinness in the world as far as I'm concerned. Four Green Fields, yeah.
Okay. I'm due for another trip down there, hopefully in the near future, so I'll keep an eye out for it. Yeah, I played. There's a great bunch of folks. There's a great session folk, a bunch of folks in Orlando who'd play, and there's some folks in Naples in the Southwest Florida. It's weird, these little pockets of Irish traditional communities. That's the best part of it is finding out who's around. You know, if you travel around a bit, you can.
Yeah.
Even if there's just a couple of folks, touch base. Let's see if we can put together a session. Have some tea.
Yeah. The Irish diaspora is something that just warms my heart every time I find out more about it. It's gorgeous. I meant to ask you there at the coming back towards the start. Now, you said your dad is from Sligo. Is he originally from Sligo and moved over to the States?
Yeah, his folks are. I mean, he moved when he was tiny, so he's an American. He's as American as they come. Lived in New York and Boston for most of his life. But yeah, his family's from there. I'm not entirely sure where. He never really got into it too much, so. The couple of times I've been over to Sligo, just kind of wandered around and found some tunes and found some gear to wear.
Gear, yeah, good stuff. Yeah. No, I was going to ask because I wasn't too sure because, like, Sean Cunningham is as Irish as Paddy Murphy. Like, do you know what I mean? Sure. And I was just curious.
Well, when we were just over, I was chatting with a bunch of folks and mentioned that, and I said, I bet we're related. I had a couple, three or four folks. So I bet I must be somehow related. I've got family from same part of town, and so they
yeah.
I assume I still have relatives over there. I just don't know anything about them, unfortunately.
Well, you probably will. You probably will. Yeah. You often find, well, at least I often find, anytime I go anywhere, you'll see a GAA jersey and you'll get chatting. Yeah. And inevitably, you'll know someone or be related. So it just happens. I was on a honeymoon in Singapore and I was talking to two lads from Tipperary who were sat right beside me. In Singapore, of all places, like, do you know what I mean? But great. So let's keep talking about that first tour experience, because I want to try and get some, like, practical stuff out of this for people that are listening. So obviously enough, tin whistle, Irish flute. It's not the most common, unfortunately. No. It's not the most common of instrument. No. In fact, as I said to you when we first touched base, you're only the second tin whistle player I've had on this podcast out of nearly 50 odd episodes, and the only one so far that has actually done it professionally, or gigged or anything like that. And I only know one other tin whistle player in the whole world, and his name is Dan O'Sullivan, and I gigged with him while I was in the States, and he played in pipes as well, and it was class. But for any whistle players, or indeed any woodwind players out there that are thinking, I want to start getting into gigging, I want to start making this a thing, what sort of gear does a whistle player need to have in their gig bag to take with them to gigs?
Well, at least for me, I keep it fairly simple, or I have most of the time. I've sort of overcomplicated it now. I finally got myself a proper case and such. The biggest negative about playing the whistle is that it's small, so you don't have a big guitar case to cover with stickers. I think that's a real missed opportunity, I think.
It is.
Relative to my fellow bandmates. So I got myself a proper Pelican case with cutouts for all the whistles that I bring, and the flute and the stands and all that. So now I can cover my thing with stickers. So that's job one, is get yourself a way to put stickers on stuff, I think, is
great stuff.
A big problem. But no, I mean, it really, it depends what you're doing. I mean, for me, I only know how to do one thing, and that's play Irish traditional music, hopefully halfway decent, which means you're sort of typically locked in with one instrument. You can play the 99% of all the music there is on this one particular whistle.
Key of D.
If you're playing with singers, you know, then you might need other stuff, because they like to sing in weirdo keys like B flat and such. So
that's
you need to have some other, well, exactly. So you need to have some way to deal with that. So I have a kit of about six whistles that covers everything that we do with our particular group, plus the flute, which is the same, you know, same concept as the whistle. Uh-huh. But that's kind of my primary instrument. And then, you know, stands, things like that. There's really not a whole lot of extra gear that you need. Microphones are kind of an interesting question, and that sort of depends on what sort of gig setup you're doing. You know, are they providing it? Or are you providing your own? Uh-huh. I will almost always play with a Shure Beta 58. They just sound pretty good, I think, for the flute in particular.
Yeah.
That being said, I've gotten to play through some really nice, like, Neumanns and stuff like that. That's kind of fun. Don't know if it's really worth the return on the investment for something like that. But
no, I was going to say
somebody with a better ear than mine could probably answer that question a lot better.
I was going to say, some of the Neumanns and some of the condenser stuff, it's like it's the law of diminishing returns. The Beta 58 is probably as good as you need it to be.
It seems to be pretty good. One of my closest friends is an Illan Piper, and he travels with a really nice condenser for all of his gigs. And I assume it probably makes a bigger difference for pipes, with the kind of complexity of tones that you get out of that between regulators and drones and all that other stuff. But yeah, for the whistle and flute, it's fairly simple.
What did you do for that first tour then? Was it just that exact same setup, or?
No, I think the first tour we just had regular Shure 58s. We were pretty poor in the beginning. Eventually I invested in my own Beta 58, and that became my mic. And then I've also tried a couple of different clip-on things for the flute to be able to move around the stage and that sort of stuff. But the problem that I've run into, and I'd be curious if there is a solution, but the problem that I've had is you get a lot of finger noise every time you tap. The mic is attached. It picks up all these extra little sounds, you know, where you don't get from the stationary mic. Plus, as a woodwind player, a flute and whistle player, we don't have any volume control. If we pull harder, it jumps the octave, you know, so we have a very narrow amount of volume control, I should say. So we manage that by obviously going closer and further away from the mic. So having a stationary mic is pretty good for me. That's the other reason I've done away with the clip-on mics, is I want to be able to adjust my volume that way. To compensate for loud and quiet parts in the songs and such like that. So
that's something I never
thought. To me, keeping it simple, just it works. It works pretty well.
It works, yeah. I suppose if you were a guitar player and singing, you wouldn't have that much freedom on the stage either, unless you use one of the Britney mics.
Sure.
But like, I don't know how how cool are you really with a Britney mic? Like, you know what I mean, unless you're Phil Collins, you can kind of get away with it. But other than that,
you gotta be able to pull that off. I'm not sure that I could manage that myself, but some folks probably could.
Yeah, some folks probably could. But there you go. That if you really really wanted to go full rock star and rock out with your flute out, you could potentially go for the Britney mic. But
well, you could, but there again, you know, you'd lose that volume control, which
you would. Yeah, which again.
As much as I love these instruments, they're very—they're not particularly versatile. You know, we can only play one note at a time. You can't change your volume. There's not a lot of stuff that we can do that other folks can do, kind of take for granted.
Yeah,
so I'm hesitant to give up my one ability to change my own volume.
That's one thing I never thought of as well. You can only play one note at a time, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. It's a very limited instrument, really, when you get down to it. You know, you can't play chords. You can't play. Yeah, it's you know. We have the ability to change the tunes through ornamentation and variation, but that's about the only tools at our disposal to affect the energy of a song or a tune.
Very good. I didn't even think of that. Now I know you've got loads of like fancy whistles and well, not even fancy whistles, but professional grade. If you say fancy whistles, it sounds like, oh, look at you with the fancy whistles. Yeah. But like, you know what I mean? I don't mean it that way. I mean as in like professional grade whistles.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
as a professional musician.
Yeah.
But did you start out that first tour with your professional stuff?
No. The first whistle I ever had, I think, was just a cheap Generation, which most folks start off the little.
I think I've got one down there.
Yeah, exactly. The blue mouthpiece, you know, it's the usual thing. And they're fine. The nice thing about the whistles, even if you were going to the fancy/professional range, is that that's not super expensive. You know, it's like a fiddle or a guitar. You can spend the amount. You can spend what you'd pay for a car on something like that. Whereas the high end in the whistle market, as ludicrous as it may be, is $500 to $1,000. You know, that's the absolute insane high end of it.
Yeah.
But no, I started out with a $10 whistle. And the trick with those that I've told folks a lot is maybe 80% of those are fine. 10% of them are exceptional and 10% of them are unplayable. As a beginner, you're not really going to know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is value into spending some money, $50, $100, on a professional instrument, if you think you're going to be remotely serious about it, if you're going to be remotely interested in it, there's value to it because you're never sure if it's your fault or the whistle's fault in the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's a good problem to have if you know it's always your fault.
100%.
That's a lot easier to fix, you know?
Yeah.
But then the one that I always recommend for beginners is one by a company called Clark. It's a Clark Sweet Tone. Also very cheap, $15, but they're very reliable. And they're easy to play, and that's what I always start my students out on in the beginning because they're easy, they're simple, and it lets you focus on the difficult bits, you know, getting good control and good finger control and you know breath and all that stuff. So they work great. And the only real need to go to something more professional is if you're worried about intonation or if you start playing with other people and you want something that's a little bit more accurate and more reliable. And there's just different types of tone too. You know, you can even The instrument is fairly simple in concept, but there are several different ways to do it, and you can get a fair few different tones out of it, depending on who's making the whistle that you're playing.
Yeah, very good. And then is it anything to do with, like, what does air tightness come into it? Because I know harmonicas, like, I play harmonica as well, and that's sort of, a lot of what you're saying is resonating with me, that, like, you can buy an expensive harmonica for 60 quid, 70 quid. Maybe if you're buying a Suzuki Manji, it could be up about £90 or something like that, and that is... like very expensive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if it breaks, you just go and buy a new one. I've got about 100 harmonicas up in the attic in my harmonica graveyard. It's just not worth fixing. Do you know what I mean?
But
a lot of the difference between a beginner harmonica and a professional grade harmonica could be £10 or £15. But the difference being that the professional grade one is very airtight, and that really, really helps with things like intonation, with ornamentation, with actually being able to control the instrument. Does air tightness or anything along those lines come into play with tin whistle?
Yeah, definitely. There's a very popular brand of beginner instrument, just also made by the same company, Clark. It's just called a Clark Original. It's the silver. You've probably seen it. Silver. It's all one piece. It looks like it's a rolled piece of tin. Wooden block in the end of it. Very, very basic.
I think I've got one down there as well.
Yeah, and it leaks air like a sieve. It's the most useless thing I've ever seen, and people swear by them because they've got this nice, airy, breathy sound. Well, yeah, that airy, breathy sound is you waste
air. It's air and breath.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, but people like it for that particular characteristic. So there's definitely that part of the conversation. My take is if you're buying a whistle from a professional maker where they're handmade, if there's any sort of air leakiness, then you've got a serious problem. That definitely shouldn't be the case. They all should be pretty serious. Now there's different air requirements. Like some of them will just need more air to get to certain points, or some are more louder because of it. And that's one of those things that just sort of comes down to personal preference. You know, do you like the sound of that? Do you want it to be more forceful? Do you want it to be softer, sweeter, you know, that kind of thing. So you can find different manufacturers for about the same price, all very professional, but slightly different characteristics, you know, and that's where it's a lot of trial and error. And I know a lot of whistle players, whether they've been playing for a year, whether they've been playing for 100 years, they have boxes and boxes of whistles because they've tried every single one there is out there, and everybody seems to do it. I assume sounds like the same thing with harmonicas.
Yeah.
You're just going through a million of them, just trying to find what suits you, you know.
100%. Yeah, no, 100%. So then what ones have you found that suit you? What's your personal preference?
The one that I play regularly is a fellow named Gary Humphrey. He's actually here in Tennessee, of all places, in east of me by a couple hours or so, in a small town. And I've been playing his stuff for about 20 years. Everything I play on stage is made by him. And I like his, mostly originally I liked them because they look like the basic cheap generations, but they were handmade. They didn't look particularly fancy, but they were in tune with itself. They were tunable. They were, you know, easy to play, high quality sound. Then I've also got, by way of the social media situation, a lot of folks have reached out to you know, have me do reviews and try out a bunch of stuff. I met up with this company called Lear. They're out of Mayo. And they have really kind of changed the game a little bit, in that they're coming up with interesting ideas, which I think is fun and worth looking at, sort of changing the way that the instruments are made. So I really like those two, and they have a different sound than the ones that I play regularly. So like I used a couple of these on the recording cause I was looking for a bit of a clearer sound, and that had it, particularly in the lower keys. So I used that on our latest record. So There's a few folks out there that are making some pretty high quality stuff now.
Good stuff. Excellent. Yeah. Great. I hope people out there listening, if you needed some practical advice, you've gotten something there anyway. Let's shift back to you were touring. Now you said there at the start that you're kind of an IT guy by trade. Was music ever on the cards as a full time, or what was the story there?
I guess I'd given it some thought. I never really thought it would ever be a thing. It was always kind of something fun that I really enjoyed doing by going to pubs and playing sessions and such like that. To be able to go on the road full time was not something I ever planned as a kid, but when the opportunity presented itself, it's like, well, I'm how many of these am I going to get? So I might as well do it. Yeah. Fortunately, I've had a couple over the years. I toured with one of those big Celtic Christmas shows.
Cool.
I did that for 5 or 6 years. And so that was another very different, but also cool touring experience. And now hopefully with the band that I got now, we'd certainly like to get out on the road and start doing some more regular playing. It'd be fun to make it a full-time thing.
And what do you think is holding you back from making that a full-time thing?
Well, the fact that we're playing in a very niche world, the Irish Americana world, which our current band is, it's, you know, we're not going to be,
it's niche.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to be Justin Bieber playing the Enormo Dome anytime soon, but
no,
you know, but hopefully getting out into the festivals and we, you know, we needed to get a record out, and the pandemic kind of put a squash on that for a while. So we had to slow everything down, but it also gave us a chance to rehearse and hopefully get a little better. We'd certainly like to be doing some more regular playing, and it's looking up. We're getting some festivals lined up, for the summer and the fall. So hopefully.
Cool. Yeah, no, whatever about the sort of the Irish niche is, there's enough of a niche, but the Irish American, and I know what you mean, it is, it's not, you don't fit into that just Irish music niche. There is an awful lot of Americana and kind of bluegrassy sort of vibes and stuff going on. What about some of your favorite tour stories? Have you got any like mad stories about touring? You must do.
Yeah, we had in the first Irish rock band, we had very devoted fans, I would say. Great folks. So we played a few weddings, one of which was on an Air Force base, and it was half Star Trek and half Braveheart / vaguely Celtic. So you had folks wearing kilts with Star Trek tops with the tricorder on their thing. Very odd. But lovely couple, and they seemed to thoroughly enjoy themselves, and we were the wedding band, again, in an Air Force base. So that was definitely odd. The nude beach, not a nude beach, the nude nudist commune thing. I ended up playing one of those, which didn't know was a nudist commune when we got there until I saw somebody's tubes hanging out who was like a regular. Then I thought, oh, okay, this is not what I was expecting. Like,
America really is.
I know you.
America is the land of opportunity in every sense of the way.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's
that was not one I'd planned on. Yeah,
I once ended up playing in a strip club here in Aberdeen. We went to play our gig, and the guy was like, "Oh, there's the place is after getting far busier than we expected. We don't have any room for you. But we've got the other venue upstairs." Now, I was like, "What, in the strip club?" And he was like, "Yeah, would you be up for that?" And I was like, "It was myself playing acoustic guitar and singing, and I had a mate playing cajon, Niall. And how are you, Niall, if you're listening?" And he says, "What are we going to do? Play on either side of the strip pole?" And sure enough, there was me and Niall on either side of the strip pole. And there was there was lads getting lap dances in all the private rooms to me singing like the Wild Rover and all that. It was great.
I played a strip joint as well. It was very recently converted from a strip joint to a music venue, I suppose, but it still had all the accoutrement of the strip joint, and I got to play with my back to the pole, so I kind of just leaned up against it the whole time I was playing, because they hadn't taken that one down yet. But it worked, you know, it was comfortable. Gave me a place to rest while I was playing. Couldn't bother me.
Far be it from me to give out about playing in a place where there was people walking around in, you know what I mean? And it was, sure. I've done worse gigs, but that was fair enough. Yeah, that's a new one, like in the Star Trek kilt vibe. And
yeah, there's a very strange. I don't know if it's just in America or if that's a worldwide phenomenon or what, but there's a very strange crossover between vaguely Celtic things like kilts and bagpipes and such, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, all these things that are not related in the least, but some end up being juxtaposed at a lot of fancy events, and so we get to play a couple of those.
Yeah,
they always have good food, though.
Maybe it's the Comic-Con effect, because you know the way you go to Comic-Con and you can see Marty McFly's girlfriend and the Blue Power Ranger beside each other.
Right, true. Yeah.
So maybe it's
Maybe. I've done a fair few of those, and again, it wasn't an isolated incident. That's what made it so odd that this is a thing, and not a thing I knew anything about.
Well, for better or worse, I'm happy it's a thing. It sounds great. Yeah. I'm happy for everybody that goes and enjoys that. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, they seem to really enjoy themselves.
Yeah, sure. Look, if you're happy, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's keep on going then. So you done your first tour when you were kind of 19. You done that for a few years, and you went and you done a few other bits and bobs, and eventually you found yourself. You didn't grow up in Nashville, did you?
Off and on, no. I kind of bounced between here and New York. I lived in Texas for a year, lived in Iowa for a year. So I was bouncing all over the place.
But
Nashville has kind of been a home base now off and on for, I guess, about 20 years or so.
Grand.
But yeah, New York was really where I kind of grew up playing, I suppose, where I learned to play.
Yeah.
There was actually a surprisingly decent scene here in Nashville back then. It was small, but there was only, you know, four or five folks, but there were some pretty good players. But you know, New York, you could find a session every night of the week. That's kind of what I needed to just dive in and hardly do any playing, but mostly spend the night sitting and listening and drinking and smoking, because it was the 90s and you could do that then.
Yeah.
But recording, you know, listening to tunes, record some and go back home and learn them the next day and hopefully have a few the next time I come back. But a lot of time spent with the flute sitting on the table and just my ears open.
It doesn't matter. So you're there for the crack, and if do you know what I mean? I couldn't have been happier too.
I was thrilled.
Exactly,
I was thrilled to be there. Yeah.
Whenever people ask myself and my bandmate to go play somewhere, I often do say, "It's like, look, we go for a pint, and sometimes songs happen." So that's just the way it is. It's fantastic. Yeah. What would you must have a favorite spot then in New York? Anyone that's ever been to New York, there's an Irish pub on every corner. Yeah. Like, there's probably more Irish pubs than people in New York. And it's just a wonderful thing. But like, you must have a favorite one.
There's a couple. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to stay with a friend, one of the regulars from my dad's bar, who lived on 38th and 2nd. So I was in good access in Manhattan to a bunch of spots. Patty Riley's on 29th Street. That was one of the first places I ever went. And I ended up doing gigs there with the rock band after that, where a band called Black 47 got started. And so that was kind of their spot. the regular session spots that I went to, there's one called Swift's that did a, still does a Tuesday night session with some legends, you know, monster players. And then a place called O'Neill's, which is gone now. That was the Saturday night session with some also regular folks who've been pretty big influences on me. So I tried to get out to three or four a week. I was working. I used to work in the Trade Center back in the 90s there.
Oh, did you?
So I worked on the Commodities Exchange, which was in four world trade. So that's where I was every day of the week. And actually, there was a brilliant fiddle player, Tony DeMarco, who's is a big Sligo style exponent, a big part of the New York scene, who worked two booths away from me in the World Trade Center. So that's how I got connected with him. And sure enough, he's a legend in New York and has really held down that scene. Still does, runs the 11th Street session on Sunday nights. So there's just great tunes all the time. It's like you said, there's 1,000 pubs in New York and they're all pretty good.
Yeah. The only one I ever gigged in was O'Donohue's just off Times Square. I'm going to say just off Times Square
for sure.
Pick part of just off Times Square, but O'Donohue's on Times Square, and that was a grand spot.
There's some cool spots. New York's got some great spots.
It does. It really, really does. And it's a totally different culture altogether. Yeah. Whenever I was over there, I was like, this is exactly like it is in the films. Like, it's exactly as it is in the films. I don't know if you experienced that as like a native, but I always just thought, I was like, whenever I was in New York, I was like, this is just cool. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I could be getting served the worst pint of absolute slop and people be giving me dogs abuse and I'm just sitting there just happy out. I'm like, this is cool. This is great.
It's a hell of an environment. It's not, you know, some folks love it, some folks hate it. It's, to me, it feels like home. You know, you just adapt to that speed and that way of life, and you know, you just kind of get used to it. It's weird. It's a cool town.
It's a very, very cool town. Cool town. But speaking of cool towns, Nashville. I'm dying to get over to Nashville. I'd love to get over to Nashville for any amount for just to get over.
Never been here at all. I've never been here at all. Yeah.
Never been there at all. I've been up and down. I played in New York, in Atlantic City, in DC, in Tampa Bay. I've been to a couple of other spots, but no, I've never been any farther inland than like DC. And I'd love to get over to Nashville, but I know
it's interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting town.
So how do you like, how does a tin whistle player, this is going to sound like a really stupid question, and I promise it's not coming from a place of stupidity, but how does a whistle player make a living if they wanted to in Nashville?
Yeah, it's probably not the ideal instrument for here. Although there's I don't know if it's a rise, but there's an interest in Celticing up some country songs and such. So I've done a lot of recording gigs and such for that. It's hit or miss. It's definitely irregular. You know, you get somebody who wants to add an Irish touch to some particular song that may or may not vaguely reference Ireland. So I get into to do a line here or there. And so those are really fun. I like doing that stuff. Even though it's kind of out of my wheelhouse, the country scene and the pop scene is, you know, I certainly don't know anything about it, but typically they want me to come in and do my thing. You know, they want it to be an Irish sound. So it's not like I'm trying to play country on the whistle. That wouldn't go well, at least not for me. No. I wouldn't have any idea how to do that. So that's usually how it works around here. The other nice thing is that, you know, at least the group that I'm in now is sort of an Americana-ish sound, some of that crossover kind of a thing. So definitely not bluegrass and old time, because I don't know anything about that either, but being able to do some of the songwritery stuff and put some of those whistle flute lines across it, that's been, you know, that's kind of been my bread and butter since I've been here. What works pretty well. There are a million recording studios here, so Nashville's not a great place to do gigs. Typically we're fortunate in that we've found a gig at a fantastic Irish pub here. We have a regular house band gig there, which is great. But as a general rule, it's a tricky place to play gigs because there's a million musicians and everyone will play for free. So it's not a great place to make a living. But recording wise, meeting people, writing stuff, definitely a good place for that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because you said it's not a great place to make a living. But I suppose
gigs, it's tricky. Yeah, but there's other parts of the business, you know, for sure that you can definitely make a living out here.
Which brings me lovely on to my next point, was that I was looking at your website before we came on, and there's something on your website that I need to ask you about. You've been teaching online. Now, I know you teach online, and anybody that is a fan of yours and knows who you are, knows that you teach online. That's grand. But you've been teaching online since 1999.
Yes. And you've done the math on that, and you figure, why the hell is somebody who's only been playing a couple of years teaching? I've asked myself the same question.
That's not where I arrived at at all. I arrived at online before the year 2000. Yes. That's how I arrived.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm a very early adopter to computers and the internet and programming.
You're nearly that early. You could probably be like described as the inventor of it.
I was in the ballpark. I was in that conversation. Yeah. I mean, I grew up using technologies that I could, that no one has, would have any idea what I was talking about. I'm sure pre-internet communication systems that no longer exist and have gone the way of the dodo. I definitely was one that rode that wave, to the early web, the early chat rooms, the early online community concepts, forums, mailing lists, you know, all those really old school technologies. I was on that. And that's kind of how the whole teaching thing came about, was I wanted to learn web design. And, no, at the time there weren't a whole lot of paying gigs for that because nobody knew if this internet thing was here to stay. So, I couldn't just do web sites for no reason. So I wanted to have a reason. So the reason was to build a site to teach Irish music on the Tin Whistle. And so I messed around with early streaming technologies and audio recording. And it kind of got me into that, and early video stuff, and very, very early on YouTube. I've had a YouTube account since like 2002 or whenever that was, not long after they started.
Jeez. Yeah.
I've just been at it forever. But the question that I posed was also a valid one. I'd only been playing for a couple of years. Right mind did I think I could teach? And if I go back and look at some of those old videos, I think, oh God, I hope nobody watches that. That's terrible.
No, but then why did you? Because it's one of these things. It's posed a good sort of question, not just for fiddle player or for whistle players, but for any musicians in that, or for any musicians wanting to teach, wanting to perform, mm-hmm. wanting to do anything with it, in that. Some people might think, oh, who does he think he is? He's only been teaching for a couple of years. Do you know what I mean? Or he's only been playing himself for a couple of years. Who the fuck is he to tell me how to do it? But
a legitimate question. And I mean, honestly, it was just a matter of there was a vacuum at the time. You know, that didn't exist. There was no, there's a group that's teaching Tread that's really good. Online Irish Academy Music. Great bunch of folks, wonderful players, and they've got a great curriculum. If you're interested, I would definitely look into that. Mm. But that didn't exist in 1999 or 2000. You know, there was none of that. Yeah. So there was a vacuum, and on the forums, I saw an opportunity. Whether or not I should have is probably a different conversation, because I certainly had no business teaching then. But again, there wasn't a lot. Now, the trouble is that problem has sort of propagated. And there's plenty of folks teaching a variety of things, tin whistle, woodworking, anything online that probably should have no business doing it. So I'm at the same time a part of the problem, and hopefully a solution as well. Yeah. So I'm well aware of the hypocrisy of that. Because I have had people come to me and say, oh, I was trying to learn from so-and-so online, and you know, I wasn't really getting very far. And I go, well, that's because they don't really know what they're doing. But okay, fair enough. Let's see if we can undo some of those mistakes, you know.
Well, what did it look like? So if I found you back in 1999 when I was 7, what would, and I wanted to learn how to play a tin whistle, what did you get in 1999?
You would have gotten some very grainy footage of me with the camera about this far from my face, you know, playing. Oh, it's really bad. You know, and very poor instruction, I would say. It was rudimentary. It was very early technologies. And I've actually, it's funny, I've kind of done the deep dive as my videography editing skills have hopefully progressed. I've gone back and pulled some of those old ones for, you know, behind the scenes stuff, or people ask me about the history of my channel and whatnot. So I've done a video on that, or I'll do various reasons, 10,000 subscribers, 20,000 subscribers. I'll do a thing, you know? And so I'll go back and look through some of those. Like, God, these really were God awful. Just appalling. Yeah. They're really bad. And pointless, but again, there wasn't really anything else. So it was kind of like the people who I interacted with then, we were all kind of just figuring it out together. Like I knew I could play well enough to make notes and go on tour and that sort of thing. I had no idea, no business teaching, because I didn't know what I was doing with that side of it. But like, I do have some experience here. And again, there's a vacuum. So let's fill it.
Yeah. That's because... It just fascinates me that in 1999 this was happening, and like it took the best part of another 20 years for the rest of the world to realize that there is an opportunity to be had in doing stuff online. Like, I teach online now, but I only started teaching online purely because of the pandemic.
Sure. And that definitely pushed a lot of folks too. I mean, I think
99%. Yeah. I would say a huge percentage of the music teachers in the world nowadays that are teaching online are only teaching online because they had to out of necessity, and they've now realized the huge potential of it. But you were doing it 20 years previous. That's just, it baffles me because I didn't even know what the internet was in 1999. I don't even think we had a computer.
Sure.
This is the thing, is that back in Ireland, like when you were saying about that, it reminded me of, have you watched the series? This is a complete tangent, but have you watched the series Pam and Tommy?
No, I haven't. I know which one you're talking. I haven't seen it yet. No. Yeah. It was very good.
It was really good. But it was that sort of thing where once they realized that the video had gone online.
Oh, yeah. They were pioneers in the sex tape industry. Yeah.
They were pioneers of it.
That's right.
So there's the tree. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But like they even like, but and that would have been like what, 97, 98. So thereabouts. Like, but they had to then go and get a computer. To go and find out what the fuck was going on. And there was you. Fair play to you. That's absolutely fantastic. So how was that then, like, kind of progressed and gotten better? Like, obviously, right, you're saying so those first videos were that. They weren't great. And it was a grainy video. I'd imagine, like, how do you even take, like, was PayPal around in 1999? How did you take payment for it or what?
I didn't. No, there was no money. No, it was all just for the purposes of creating content on the web. I had initially gotten the idea for Online Academy of Irish Music a few years before they did, and tried to run it out as a site called Trad Tutor, because my site was Whistle Tutor, so I was going to expand it out to a variety of instruments. And I got a few people on board and built a site, and I just kind of lost interest. I had other stuff come up and just couldn't commit the time to doing it. But technology, you know, it changes. The first camera that I had was probably $200 or $300, and it was hot garbage, but it was the only thing that did. The only thing you could get at the time.
Yeah.
And then I got a point and shoot camera that could do fairly terrible video, and I used that instead. Then I got a slightly better camera, and over time technology gets better and better. And hell, I mean, these days most folks are doing everything with their phones, obviously.
Yeah.
Which are really good. Phones are very good. So my experience was the audio is a lot more important than the video, at least in the days of YouTube as it was getting going. You could survive crappy audio or crappy video better than you could crappy audio. So I try to invest my time and energy into getting that straight, halfway decent miking and sound dampening and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
But it's not fancy. It's like I'm using moving blankets and such to do that. You don't have to spend a ton of money. You don't have to go crazy with gear.
No,
just kind of think it through a little bit.
Yeah. Well, no, I that's blowing my mind. It's absolutely blowing my mind. So it is that you were doing that back in 1999 and all that. So, well, fair play to you, as I said. So you still teach?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I have a new student from Lithuania. In fact, I had a lesson with him yesterday. So the online, the Skype and Teams and all that stuff. Yeah. It makes it pretty wild to be able to do that.
So what does an online lesson with Sean Cunningham look like?
Well, it really depends on what folks are looking to get out of it. I've got a variety of folks, from straight beginners to people who have been doing it for a while who want to work on specific things. So it really sort of depends. My first question with any new student is, what do you want to get out of it? And if their answer is anything other than traditional Irish music, I'm really quick to say, well, I'm happy to teach you my style, and you can apply that to video game music or soundtracks or elf metal or whatever it is that you're interested in. Knock yourself out. I'm not probably the right guy for that, but if you're interested in jigs and reels, well, I can hopefully get you going, get you started anyway. So it's really more a matter of hopefully refining folks' focus, I think, at least in the beginning. And then it's a matter of, here's some like basic beginner exercises that I always get everybody doing, or sort of fundamental stuff. My goal is mostly to get people to think about the tunes and what sort of style and soul you want to put into it, rather than how do I play an A. We want to eliminate a lot of the thought process from how do we do this stuff to just when and why do we do this stuff. So that's kind of what I try to shoot towards. And so that's what a lot of the basic boring exercises are for, of course. you know, but hopefully make it fun at least, and get folks playing a tune that they like, a tune that they've already got in their head, and just make it more interesting. I get a lot of that. A lot of folks who have already been playing for a bit, and they want to, you know, they want to just improve and get some of those little ornaments down, get some of the details down in the playing.
Yeah. Say someone wants to learn tin whistle, Witcher, what do they need to actually access these lessons other than a tin whistle?
I do everything on Skype, and which is kind of old, but I like them because so far that's the only one that I found that doesn't have any weird compression, particularly on the whistle. I think it's the high pitch. Most of these, it tends to squash it, and so the notes don't even sound. I tried doing Zoom for a while. I hear that they've made some adjustments so that they maybe they can, I don't know. You probably know more about it than I would really do in your line of work. Yeah.
There has been improvements, but like they were making improvements from literally nothing. Like, so anything from where they were was an improvement. It was grand. It was actually grand for a while. And then there was, don't know what happened, that the audio just all of a sudden went completely to shite. Mm. And then there was a new update made that was like, what did they call it? It was called Original Sound for Musicians, but now it's called like Live Sound or something like that. It's a little button up the corner or something. It's not great. It's not great at all. Okay. There's one that's great called Forte that is free to use, and it's specifically for music lessons. And there's another one, specifically for music lessons. And there's another one actually from called
Forte,
Rock Out
like,
Loud.
Like as in getting as in loud, like, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah, Forte. Okay. Yeah, and that is that's a free platform, and that's actually it's so far so good. It's okay. It's not amazing, but it's okay. But there's another one that's shit hot that's called Rock Out Loud Live, and that was actually developed by another guy called Mike Grande that was on the podcast not too long ago.
Oh, nice.
Who also worked in the Trade Center, probably at the same time as you. So there you go. So check out maybe Rock Out Loud Live or Forte, because they're specifically, well, Mike would be the first one to tell you that Rock Out Loud Live is specifically for phenomenal audio, because they don't prioritize the video at all. And to his credit, the audio is actually, it's as good as can be gotten with the limitations of, even in today's world, the limitations of technology, but it's as good as you're going to get. So,
well, I mean, it'd be nice to overcome the lag to the point where you could play together, but I don't see how that's theoretically possible within the laws of physics. But you know, for at least for lessons and stuff, it hasn't been such a big problem. Because I'll have this play something, I'll listen to it. Okay, play. We can kind of go back and forth, and it's never been a real issue for recording. I don't know how people do it. I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know how that's even possible.
Well, there was a platform from Musicology or something like that, or something, maybe Musicology, and allegedly you could play in time with each other, and it's something really clever to do with like delaying the stream by a certain amount of not even milliseconds. It was like frames or something like that. I can't remember how it worked, but there was some sort of highfalutin clever technology. But again, I don't understand how, because internet speed sort of fluctuates, and if you have not great, like if you're still stuck on like like copper wire broadband, and you're getting like maybe 7 or 8 up and down, the difference between 7 or 8 up and down and 4 or 5 up and down is huge. Yeah. But the difference between 70 up and down and 80 up and down is nowhere near the same. Do you know what I mean? So, I don't know. But hopefully there's some clever clogs out there that is, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. We have the likes of ChatGPT that can tell you more about yourself than than you know yourself. Like, so it's only a matter of time before someone figures out how to do it. And the sooner the better. But because that was one thing that kind of stuck in my mind, that I was like, how in the hell does he do whistle lessons online? Because of, like, I don't care what you say about the audio and stuff like that with Zoom and stuff, there is limitations. And I'm glad
I don't know if they just never bothered to put in any of those fancy compression features that everybody else has or what. Maybe it's just so old they never bothered to update it, but it doesn't squash the high pitch, and that's the one that's been so weird. It's you know, my own voice level has never been an issue with any of those other apps. We use Teams for work all the time; works great. Mm. I've tried using that; it's the same problem. I can't hear the other person playing. It just completely squashes it above a certain frequency, I guess. I don't know, but so far it's been pretty good, and that's really about all there is to it. I mean, I've had folks who just use their basic built-in computer microphone, and you know, it doesn't have to be anything particularly fancy. It's good enough to be able to hear what it is that they're doing. And I can mostly just, I'm watching fingers anyway, as long as the camera works well enough so I can see what they're doing. Yeah, that's really about all we need. It's worked pretty well.
Yeah. Great stuff. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Before we start finishing up here, Sean, head into a quick fire. Is there anything you're working? Oh, no, hang on. We've not spoken about the album that came out. So you're you're now currently in a band called Stern Wheelers.
Yes.
And your album came out. When did it come out?
The beginning of December. So it's been out for a bit. It was about 2 years in the process. Thanks to the pandemic, it was a bit of a slow battle. But probably for the better, it made us pay a little bit more attention and hopefully get things right. It's been out for a while now. A lot of fun. A lot of fun to play.
What's the name of the album?
The album is Woke Up Old.
Woke Up Old.
Yeah, which is a line from one of the songs in there, which encapsulates the band members rather well. We all just woke up old one day.
Very good, yeah. Very good. Have you got a favorite track from the? We were speaking before we started recording. The Mermaid is definitely my favorite track. I've listened to the whole album. The Mermaid is just it's a beautiful version. Have you got a favorite track off the album?
Yeah, I think my favorite song that my friend Patrick wrote called Vimer Oge, which is the Irish chorus on there, and that's where the title track comes from. We were young, but we woke up old is the chorus of it. And it's a great song. He's a very good songwriter. He has some very cool turns of phrase, and I got to write the little musical instrumental bit in between. So that's probably my favorite one. It's the most well thought out, I think.
Good stuff.
I like the best. Yeah.
So what's next for you then? What's next?
Well, we've got a couple of festivals coming up. August and September have been pretty good, fortunately, from a booking standpoint. We've got a few of those, doing a bit of traveling east of here for a while. And we were just in Ireland last month, doing some playing and such. So that was pretty great. We're hoping to go back sooner rather than later, get some gigs booked and get paid to be there this time.
Yeah. You were down in Milltown, Malibu, were you?
We were, yeah. Went to see some friends over there at Willie Week. Over there and had some very long nights. We got dropped into a session for a solid 8 hours the first day. Just kind of got jammed in a corner and couldn't leave. So that was a blast. The next day we needed a little bit more quiet, so we were over in Lynch, and that was great. That was one of the best sessions I've ever had in my life. It was just it was just one of those times where it's just clicking, you know, and it just everybody knows the same tunes and we're all just grooving really well. So that was we had a lot of those. The whole trip we were there about I think 10 days, and we played every day except the first and last because we were exhausted. But we found tunes or gigs and stuff every day. It was great.
That's great. And you were in Westport as well while you were over there, weren't you?
Yep. Got to go to Matt Malloy's. Got to meet the legend.
I know Matt Malloy's very well. I played there myself last summer. Great.
Oh, so much fun. I'd been there 20 years prior to that. And I'd met Matt at a Chieftains gig when they played in Nashville probably 10 years prior. But it was nice to be able to actually sit down and chat for a minute. Because he's the reason that I'm playing the flute. I can remember where I was the first time I heard him play. And deciding then and there that I wanted to do it. So it was great to be able to sit down in his place and have tunes and met his son and had tunes with him. So
all right,
it was great. It was everywhere we went, we just had an absolute blast and got well taken care of. And couldn't ask for a better trip.
Great stuff. Are you heading back to Ireland anytime soon?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, we were talking about January about getting some things lined up then, but if not then, maybe the following summer.
And have you got any plans on where you're going to go?
Well, everybody kept telling us go down to Cork and Kerry, which we did not get a chance to go to. Everybody says go to Donegal. So we know some folks up there, which I've also not been to. At the same time, it's hard to pass up Clare because there's so much music out there. And we've made some good friends in Mayo with the Lear Whistle folks. So they've invited us. And had some great times there. I mean, really, I don't think there's too many places over there where you're going to be bored or have a bad time. You know, there's always something good happening over there.
Yeah, well, when I said earlier on about one or two times I've ever played and people listened, Guidor in County Donegal up in Leo's Tavern. If you know Leo's Tavern.
I've not ever been to Donegal yet. I would like to. Yeah.
Oh, listen, Clare, Westport, the west coast of Ireland, grand.
Yeah.
Donegal, the most beautiful part of the whole entire world. I'll fight anyone on that. It is, and Guidor especially. It's lovely. Leo's Tavern is run by the Brennan family, as in Clannad and Enyan,
sure,
and all of those. So, my Brennan is her daughter, Ashling, is one of my best friends. She was actually the very, very first guest on this podcast. And so, and consequently, I'm good friends with all of them, with Maya and all that. And I played in their pub. Myself and Maya played a New Year's gig once, actually. It was great. We played Fairy Tale in the Ark and stuff. It was fantastic. Nice. Brilliant stuff. But like, I played in their pub in Leo's Tavern in Gwydor, and everyone just shut up and just listened. And that was that one was lovely, because everyone was really, really listening and stuff like that, and really like not listening as in like, oh yeah, that's nice, listening as in like encouraging and just really supporting. And it was lovely. So
that's great.
Yes.
Yeah, Donegal. Yeah, I gotta get there. Yeah,
get up to Donegal. Get up to Gwydor. Go see the Poison Glen. Go and get some.
Poison Glen. Yeah, I've heard of that place.
Poison Glen. Beautiful.
To see. Yeah.
Go and get, what was it called? The Atlantic Platter in. Oh, there's a pub in. Burtonport. I think it's called Burtonport. Anyone from Donegal now is cringing listening to this now, because it's like this fucking awfully gobshite talking shite. Anyway, basically, Donegal, get up to Donegal.
All right, fair enough.
Right,
fair enough. Yeah,
enough of me butchering the most beautiful part of the world. Let's jump into a quick fire round here of just silly questions that are just for the crack, just to finish up on a. I always say finish up on a lighter note, and I always do think, God, we must have been talking about real hard depressing stuff. But you know, No, definitely not. Definitely not. This has been an absolute delight of a Sunday. Delightful way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
Thanks for having me. This is a blast.
Oh, no, it was great fun. So anyway, right, let's jump into quick fire round. So morning person or night owl?
God, I've been a night owl my whole life, but I think now I'm just by default becoming a morning person. I get up when the sun comes up, and it's just, you know, you got to get carried on,
Well, as we spoke, it's probably, 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning for you, and there you are, bright and early, not a bother. Do you have a favorite book of all time?
It's called Round Ireland with a Fridge by a fellow named Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk?
No, not the skateboarder. Hawk is the skateboarder. Hawks is the comedian, British comedian. Yeah, he hitchhiked around the circumference of Ireland with a refrigerator and wrote a travelogue about it. It's the funniest thing I've ever read. Short read. Put it on your list. It's hilarious.
So Round Ireland with a Fridge?
Round Ireland with a Fridge, yeah. It's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, you'll be pissing yourself laughing within the first 20 pages or so.
Love it.
Yeah,
love it.
It's great.
Beach holiday or mountain retreat?
Oh, beach for sure. Yeah.
Beach, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Mountains are lovely, but God, yeah, no, I'm definitely a beach guy.
I wouldn't thank you for a beach. Terrified of water. I saw Jaws when I was 9, and that was enough for me.
Oh, God, I'd live in it. Yeah, I'm in there in the heartbeat, yeah.
Yeah. Tea or coffee?
Tea, for sure. Hate coffee. God.
I hate coffee.
I'm a Red Bull guy, really. But
well, I can see that. Yeah, you're the only American person I've ever come across in my life that doesn't drink coffee.
I like the smell of it. I like when people make it, but it just tastes like burnt water. It just seems terrible. Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, tea. Tea. I love. Yeah.
Okay, and leading on from that one, Barry's or Lions?
Berries. Yeah, but brought back a bunch of berries with me. Yeah, I like Lions. Lions is fine. It's good. I don't know. I've just grown up with berries, I think.
There's two types of people in Ireland. There's people that drink Barry's, and then there's people that are wrong. Right. And that's just the fact of the matter.
My dad's place had Barry's, so I think it probably just got stuck in my brain as a kid. And
there you go. Yeah. There you go. Have you got a favorite app on your phone?
Favorite app? Well, I mean, for better or worse, the socials are probably the ones that I use the most. I don't know if they're exactly my favorite. Reddit is kind of interesting. That's a good way to kill some time. I'll just see random things and go on a bit of a wormhole deep dive kind of thing. So that's kind of a fun one, I suppose. That's not tied to any particular need.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Have you got any one goal that you want to accomplish in the next 12 months?
Well, we'd like to get another record done for sure. Certainly on the game plan, but I would say probably getting back to Ireland with some gigs lined up and a bit of a game plan in mind. Would probably be the biggest one, yeah.
Class. Yeah. Right. One last question before we finish up. And my favorite question to ask everybody. Have you got a celebrity that you would like to fight?
Like to fight? Wow.
Now, don't come back to me with like, oh, I'm more of a lover.
No.
I'm not a fighter. I get that. I either get people that are like, oh, I'm really weak, so I'm going to try and think of someone I can take. Or I don't really like fighting, right? I don't want either of those. Neither of those on a Sunday. We're fighting, right? We're going to knock the fuck out of someone. Who are you going to fight?
There was a guy, it's probably a bit of an old reference at this point, but there was a guy named Martin Shkreli, who was a pharmaceutical douche, basically, who scammed a bunch of people. He's got a very punchable face. He looks like it'd be fun to just really give him a good one. And he'd probably deserve it too. I think he's in jail, so he's probably getting that happen to him on a regular basis. But yeah, yeah. Should that situation arise, that'd be fun.
Yeah. What's his name?
Martin Shkreli. Shkreli. S-K-H something. Something like that. Yeah. If you search the words Pharma Bro, you'll find him. He's Pharma Bro.
Okay.
You'll find
him.
Well, you tell me if he doesn't have a very punchable face when you look him up.
Yeah. My dad has a version of that saying. Is like, he's a head you'd never get sick of kicking.
I like that. That's a good one. I'm gonna use that.
Well, Martin, yeah. How'd you come into Pinchin?
That's right.
Anyway, listen, Sean, before we let you go, where can people find you if they're looking for you in the world for anything tin whistle or Irish flute or bagpipe, even?
Bagpipe. Yeah, we're going to 86 the bagpipe. No, Whistle Tutor on any of the socials. I'm that pretty much everywhere. WhistleTutor.com, although I don't really ever update that site too much. But yeah, any of the socials, Whistle Tutor, yeah, you'll find me.
It's been a pleasure to have you on, Sean. You're a legend.
Oh, cheers. Thanks a bunch. This is a blast.
That was the Music Career Show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your friends about the Music Career Show.